Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Open your hearts, loosen your butts. It's time for couples therapy.
Yeah, this podcast is Andy and Naomi's, where they can both laugh and hang with all their homies, talking excellent vacationing with brunches and cuddling, to messy situationships and conscious and coupling, from Netflix hookups to single them with some Hulu, text, sex, regrets, or feeling on your new Jubu. They gon' talk about it, yeah, you are invited, needing therapy, I guarantee, baby, we got it.
It's couples therapy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Couples Therapy. My name is Naomi.
And my name is Andy.
And we are a real-life couple.
A real-life couple of comedians.
And on Couples Therapy, in quarantine, we answer a couple of questions from a couple of different listeners.
Hell yeah. You always start off, Naomi, with such a pleasant energy.
You know, I'm really trying to take opposite action. If I'm feeling weary, I try to start up.
Like when I'm the one who starts off the introduction, it's always like shock jock energy.
Yes, I know. You do shock jock, and I'm trying to soothe. I'm trying to ASMR a little bit.
Well, I love both those energies, and they both contribute to who we are as a couple. Hey, folks, welcome to Couples Therapy. Oh, this is a great episode today.
Oh, my God. You've already heard his dulcet tones. Today, we talk to the wonderful, kind, hilarious Sam Pancake. You guys, you know him. You've seen Sam, okay? You've seen him in so many things. He is an actor who has been doing the work. Most recently, however, you have seen him on A Million Little Things on ABC, Search Party on HBO Max,
yeah.
Shameless on Showtime, and he has a movie podcast called Sam Pancake Presents the Monday Afternoon Movie, where he does like 70s and 80s like TV movies. I have been on it twice, and we like watch, the movies are so funny. They're like such campy old movies. I watched The Stepford Wives Revenge of the Stepford Wives, and it's as insane as you think it is. So check that out if you are into it. But first, you have to listen to our episode with Sam.
We actually did an episode, like how early in Quar?
Like, I feel like we did that episode back in like September.
Yeah, it was like somewhat quote unquote early in Quar. That had Sam and Drew Droege.
Right. Longtime friends.
Longtime
and
friends.
Yeah.
They were on the live show like a year or more ago. Well, and it was like brilliant. We loved
so
it. We've loved them separately for years. And there was like, you know, this is early on in quarantine, quote unquote, early on in quarantine. And we didn't have the recording stuff down. Like we now have like an email.
That's
we send
true.
People, hey, do this, this, and this so that we get like a decent recording. We didn't have that protocol down.
Yes, absolutely.
And it didn't, the sound was, it was unlistenable. It ended
up
being. And we were just like, oh, but we love Sam and Drew so much. So what we ended up doing is just doing separate episodes with them once we had the protocols down.
Yes.
So this week is Sam, next week is Drew.
And it's beautiful. I mean, we love to bring them together, but they're fulfilling on their own.
Yeah. So strap your goddamn selves in for quite a wild ride. Before we get there, Naomi, I want to call back to two episodes ago with Alec Mappa. Now, we answered a advice question there about grocery store reward cards.
Right.
All right. And a woman called in with an advice question saying, like, she was at the grocery store and she got coupons printed out at the grocery store for stuff she never buys. And she found out her ex has still been using their rewards card.
And we have learned since putting out that episode, this is happening everywhere. Okay, this is rampant. This is the true pandemic.
This is the real pandemic, folks.
This is it. People using card.
Get the vaccine against using other people's rewards cards. Someone wrote us, let's say anonymous. I don't know if they wanted their name, with this story. This is about my second to last serious boyfriend after I quit dating for good. I'm 47, and around 42, I was just done with babies, liars. All I see now is red flags. I'm amazed when a couple works out.
Gorgeous. Okay, love where this is starting off.
Uh-huh. So, the main story. I had a Pep Boys rewards card, and they put in parentheses car repair chain, if you don't know. And we both took our cars there when we needed fixing and oil changes back then. I kept getting mails with his name also on it, which was irritating as it was not a good breakup for me, and I was angry for several years and did not speak to him.
Yep.
They finally did remove him from my card. This was like 7-ish years ago. And then in the mail, I got a nice $30 Pep Boys rewards card. I was like, huh, cool. He was still apparently using my card, and I got rewards for a big repair that he got.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't speaking to him at the time. I was like, good, fuck him. After the podcast episode with Alec Mappa mentioning the grocery store rewards card, I laughed and texted him and told him about it. We have this thing, which, you know, we're totally honest with each other. And I was like, ha ha, I took your rewards. And he's like, very seriously, give it back.
Oh, my God.
She just says, nope. Apparently, this guy was very angry that. But
she got the $30 rewards. But it's like.
But she took him off the card. That was her card.
Exactly. So that's on him.
That's
you need to set up your
him.
Own card. If you know you're about to spend a lot of money, it's like when you like when I go shopping, I'm like, you know, if you open your own account for a rewards card, you get 15% off in that moment. You needed to set up your own card. You need to set up your own card if you knew you're about to go to Pep Boys and spend like $1,000.
If we ever write a relationship book, Naomi, number one rule of a breakup is get your own rewards card.
Get your own rewards card. You have to be your own reward. And okay, the relationship is over. You need to be your own reward.
Damn, that's some Gale shit, Naomi.
Yes, it is, honey.
You just...
That's a fact.
Just dropped a truth bomb. In fact, that should be factored into whether you want to break up with someone or not. Do you want to put in the work to get your own rewards card?
Exactly. Actually, that should not be factored into a breakup. Absolutely not.
In the modern world, Naomi.
That's true.
In this modern hubbub.
Hubbub.
That's part of the dowry now. Rewards card. Anyway, thank you to Anonymous for writing in to tell us that.
One more thing before we get to Sam, just to let you know, Friday, April 30th at 6 p.m. PST, I will be attempting to do an hour of stand-up with the help of Joe Firestone and Aparna Nancherla.
Hell yes.
Of course it's a streaming show. I'm just going to like put some material together, figure it out. Joe and Parn are going to help me out. They're also going to be my laughers, my listeners, giving me notes. You can get tickets for that at dynastytypewriter.com. Tickets are $10 and $15. I think it'll be a really good time.
Yes. And just so you know, all that money is going to Mabel's mastectomy fund.
Yep, mastectomy and chemo fund. That is what's happening, okay? The family's got to band together in this time.
Yes,
so,
if you didn't know, Mabel just had a prophylactic mastectomy.
And then she will have 8 rounds of chemo. Ugh. So you know what? Grab that ticket, baby. DynastyTypewriter.com, April 30th. Okay, let's just get to it. We got to give him Sam now.
All right, roll it.
Sam Pancake, baby.
Sam. All right. Yes. Let's all tell each other and the audience where we are at the moment. I just 20 minutes ago, taking a shower, became seismically dizzy.
Oh, God.
Now, I woke up dehydrated because of our space heater in our bedroom.
Okay, sure,
and then
yeah.
Proceeded, instead of what a normal human would do, which is drink some water, I had a Diet Coke.
Opposites, yeah. That's the opposite of what you needed. Yeah, opposite. Go.
Then I had therapy, and instead of bringing, and I go out and sit in our car to do therapy. And instead of bringing some water with me, I brought nothing. So I sat in a hot car.
Never leave your baby in a hot car. You know that's what they say.
Yes, and I am your baby, and I'm the world's baby.
The world, Andrew Beckerman, the world's baby.
Gross.
You met him.
And then went on the exercise bike for 45 minutes. So, and this is now my,
well, you know what?
My second glass of water I'm drinking today.
Okay. I blame, you've no one to blame but yourself. Exactly. You are full, you're over 22. I don't know what your age is, but I will venture that you were over 22. Mm-hmm. You True. Need to parent yourself a little bit better there, Andy.
Yes. Yes. Where I just want to let people know if I am insane, it is because my brain is spinning okay. at
yeah,
the moment.
Yeah, it's overheated. Yeah. So how are you? Where are you at?
I am actually pretty good. I had a good day yesterday. I interviewed, did a podcast with Naomi. That's what I was.
Yes, that's me. Going,
Naomi Ekbergen, for my podcast. And we recorded a Zoom play. And it was a stressful day in terms of like, you know, my podcast stresses me out because I have to watch these movies for it and notate them.
Yeah.
Which is always ends up being fine. But today, it's a beautiful, cloudy, but blue skies, but just crazy. There's weather today in LA, which I love. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I learned a while ago that I have to always have that humidifier on at night, Andy. You have to have a humidifier. If I don't, I wake up with scratchy throat as if mm-hmm. I've been smoking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because even when it's raining, which it sort of is now in LA, it's extremely dry in the winter here. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I didn't prior to this had a rehearsal for our Golden Girls live thing, and I feel pretty good. I went to Target to buy some shit that I needed. It was time to go to Target, and there's a new gigantic Sunset and Western Target.
Yes.
And did you refuse to wear a mask?
Absolutely refuse. Oh, I don't believe in it's a hoax. It's a hoax.
Wouldn't that be
guys?
So funny if that's how we found out that Sam was an anti-masker?
You know what? Of course I wear my mask. I carry hand sanitizer with me. I'm very, yeah. I'll be honest with you. I'm a scofflaw. No, I'll be honest with you. I will go to the grocery store now and then. I feel very, I don't know. I shouldn't say this. I just have been okay with what I've been doing, so I'm keeping doing it, but I've been mm-hmm. super tight. My ship is super tight otherwise. I've just had so many not good experiences with having things delivered. Mm. And sometimes I have to just, my willfulness will be at almost a year now. I want to get in the fucking store, lay my hands to things, yes. and then sanitize my hands, and then go through the whole situation, and I that's what I did today, and then I did a walk around Silver Lake. I'm feeling pretty good.
That's so
and when you say lay your hands on, you mean heal the items.
Yes, to with my Christ-given powers of supplication and delight. Yeah.
Wait, I forgot that your Christ-given powers would be inherited, right? Because it wasn't your dad a pastor?
He was. He was a Presbyterian minister. Yeah.
Presbyterian, is that theatrical?
No.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It doesn't have
any like drama to it.
It's one of the very dry Protestants. I think it's Scottish in origin. I could be right. It's Scottish or English, one or the other. It's very WASP. It's just like a peg below Episcopal. Episcopals might as well be Catholics compared to Presbyterians. And it's especially known nowadays for being like and Drew Drogi, speaking of Drew, who we tried to do this before, it didn't take. I don't know what happened, but we and who I did your stage show with, he also is in the thing that we use is the Frozen Chosen, because it's a very WASPy, you know, it's like the children, no hugs, please. No hugs.
Okay.
I know I love yous growing up. It's a tough WASP crowd. Well, and that's, yeah.
Just really quickly, though, to explain when you said it didn't take. So initially, we tried to have Drew and Sam on, longtime lovers, is what I call their friendship. So we wanted to talk to them about their friendship. But then Drew, did not have internet. And so we could not keep him going. Sam had to keep taking over and telling stories.
Which I hate talking about myself.
Then he had to call in, and then it sounded like he was in a tunnel. So when Andy re-listened to it, he was like, "Oh no!"
No,
I try. When I'm editing this baby, I try a lot of tricks, and sometimes the tricks fail me.
Yeah,
sometimes you were.
We wanted it to happen. We really fought for it. Because it's funny, though, because I'm the kind of person where, literally as soon as a person starts cutting out, I go, okay, bye, let's call it. You know? And Andy is more like, we're going to figure this out.
I don't have those skills, so I admire that. Yeah. And I was I was still in Canada then, so that was October, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, our grand plan had been, we're going to record months worth of episodes before the election, just in case the worst happens.
Sure.
And we don't feel like being funny.
Yeah. Valid. Yeah.
So
I think of that literally every day, like many of us do. Like, holy fuck, what if that had all come to pass?
Yeah. And only the second worst thing happened. Because, of course, Naomi and I wanted Gary Johnson, the libertarian.
Sorry. Oopsie doodles.
Is that his name?
I don't know.
That sounds like a, what, if it's not his name, that sounds like a libertarian's name.
Like, I knew what you meant just by saying that. Right. Even though, even not knowing his actual name.
Okay, so Sam, you know, we're going to answer people's, like, relationship questions and stuff coming up. But first, we like to give them a sense of you. You know what I mean? You as advice giver, where you're coming from.
But I would like, if we could start with Pastor Dad.
Well, I knew you would go to Pastor Dad.
I want to go to Pastor Dad. Sure. Because, because as I was in therapy earlier, the parental, the familial relationship, the root of all.
The root of all.
Oh,
the root of all. Not all evil, all everything. and I'm wondering if so if you're the frozen chosen, does that count for familial relationships?
Oh yes. Oh, that's where it starts. That's the basis. Yeah.
It's not just like at a church at a chapel.
I mean, that's there were certainly Presbyterians I knew who seemed more who really loved and enjoyed their parents. It wasn't my experience. We were raised as were my parents, like, you know, it wasn't a huggy. This is also the 60s and 70s. It wasn't a huggy, like I said, a physical, demonstrative, I love you. It just wasn't the way things were done.
West Virginia, correct?
Yes, yeah.
Born and raised.
Yeah. Born in Virginia, born in Southern Virginia. Like, it's
on the coal mines is where you spent most of your days.
Say what?
West Virginia, born and raised. On the coal mines is where I spent most of my days.
Oh, yeah. And it wasn't even the Fresh Prince of Fresh Pancake of, of Hampshire County, West Virginia. It was not the coal mining part. It was nearer to Virginia. So it wasn't so much even those stereotypes either.
Oh, okay.
But my father was a minister, but it's a whole long story. I can't tell a short story. It's complicated.
By the way, we don't mind.
Yeah, we have time if you have time. But also, you're the oldest. You have his name.
Yeah, oldest son. Yes,
oldest son. So oldest boy.
I have an older sister, Anne Stewart Pancake, who's a professor now in literature and has a fancy residency at West Virginia University, where we all went to school. Because Daddy said, if you go there, I'll pay for it. If you don't go there, I won't pay for it.
Wow. So we all,
yeah.
Okay. But like, when a parent, like, I don't know, there's something I'm thinking where I think of, like, slightly Southern preacher, you have his name. Was there ever this pressure to represent him or be like, you are my legacy, or when you're out in these streets, you reflect on the Pancake name?
Well, there was definitely a thing of, like, raised, because, you know, my father would say, you were raised in the manner of the Southern gentleman. What are you doing? So, which I was, or my grandmother would say things. She would compliment people by saying, they have manners of the old school, you know, which is very old Southern stuff. It's sinister. Yeah. So, you know, it's like this, that whole horrible legacy that my family and many families had, that was all resting on top of me.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily for me, in a weird way, I came out, I saw my father, and I was like, I want nothing to do. We were like the magnets thing.
Okay.
Thank God for many reasons, especially back when I was a closeted gay guy. And I never came out to my father to the day he died. He died 2 years ago this week.
Wow.
I know. Well, it's just, that was just the relationship set up. He was no DT, but we're pretty sure he had narcissistic personality syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And he had slow moving dementia for what we're still kind of unraveling. That's what he finally died of, frontal lobe dementia. But how early that started, or this series of mini strokes he had, how that changed his personality. He wasn't interested in my straight brothers and sisters, except for the one who was a terrible drug addict that he kept enabling, and an insane dance of codependency, my dad's. So that's a different story. But what I was like, thank God I have two brothers and three sisters. They will take care of the children. I knew early I don't want kids. I knew I was gay early. So I was like, I'll never be married. I'll never have kids. I didn't foresee any future really for me, let alone one where that would be possible.
Mm-hmm.
So my father, though, he did, and this has been, what I was going to say was, my parents both had my grandparents had these expectations of my parents when they were younger to do certain things that my parents both bridled against. Like, my mother did not get along with her parents. That's a whole long story. But my father, the Pancakes, there's this farm in our family that's been there since literally the 1740s that I still own a chunk of. And when I say farm, I mean part of it's a little working farm, and lots of land in West Virginia in the hills in the bottom. So my daddy's dad, my granddaddy also, with my great uncle Sam, had Pancake Chevrolet, and they had properties, and they were it was a prosperous family.
I know, so, this is a true legacy. This is a yes, true ma'am. Pilgrim legacy. Keep going.
Yeah, it's in that pocket. So yeah. Daddy was my my father. Daddy, and I called him Daddy till the day he died.
Well, you're a Southern boy.
Exactly. But he was his father, John Inskip, John I, we called him. John I wanted Daddy to say he was the oldest son. Daddy was the oldest son, but he was named after his grandfather. So he was Joseph Samuel Pancake the II. I was Joseph Samuel Pancake the III. Granddaddy wanted Daddy to stay and work the farm. And Daddy said no, he wasn't interested. Mm-hmm. He majored in agriculture in college. He didn't want that. Mm-hmm. So after it's a long, sad story, but he had a wife for only 3 months who died in a car accident before all of us, which I didn't know until I was a senior in high school. And I found out from my drunk friends going out one night.
Wait, your friends
knew?
Somehow, Joey Pugh and Michelle McDonald knew before I did.
Were they looking up microfiche?
It was shocking. No, it's town gossip. Uh-huh. Oh. There's this whole story that somehow was kept from us.
Whoa.
And then John I, he killed it. When he committed suicide by shooting himself in the heart in 1968. Years later, I was telling, because that pancakes were a big family. I was telling my cousins, and they were like, Granddaddy didn't die by suicide. He had a heart attack. And we were like, later on, I would make the joke, yeah, this gun attacked his heart with a bullet. But like, I'm tacky. But they didn't know. So it was lots of secrets and lies.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
And it was certainly not a family where at 16 I was like, Mom and Dad, I have something to say. Okay. But my father, my mother's mother wanted me to take over my grandfather's, he wanted me to take over his real estate appraisal business. I said no. Mm-hmm. And Daddy knew not to. Daddy was kind of entertained by me, but he had my brothers to be the jock, hunter, straight, child producing men that they are to fulfill that. And I was this kook, and he just always treated me like this little imp, and he never knew what to make of me. He was much harder on my brother who still has a very hard life with his problems.
Yeah.
Who was a big jock in high school.
Hmm.
He was the blonde jock. He was
Johnson, if you will. The Don Johnson in Revenge of the Stepford Wives. Which Sam and I discussed yesterday.
Oh, I thought about that all day long, Naomi. It's so weird. There were so many. That movie really resonated with me. Anyway, that's a long, way long, boring story.
No, honey, that was not boring. Nope. You know I want the Sam Pancake memoir. Okay. Well, you know I want the memoir.
I'm not imagining John Johnson. Don Johnson.
Not Gary Johnson. Don Johnson.
not the president we wish we had, Gary.
No, I'm sorry, Andy. I'm so sorry it didn't work out.
Kurt Russell's son. In that, what's the guy who did, what's the guy what done Slackers? And
Richard Linklater,
Boyhood, Linklater? Richard Linklater did a movie about like a base, like kind of like a Dazed and Confused ish sequel.
Oh, more recently,
And Kurt Russell's son is one of the stars of it. And what and they're like a baseball team in college, and that's what I'm imagining your brother is, just a golden Adonis.
He was, I guess, I mean, I don't, he was, yeah, I guess he did okay. He things took a bad turn in college when he, me talking about him in a podcast before got bit him in the ass a little bit at home. Okay. So I need to be careful what I say.
Yeah, sure. Of course. You don't have to.
But my sister Catherine did play college basketball at WVU. But here's one thing I will say about my father.
Yeah.
And again, it's like how much was disinterest or narcissism or just the dementia. He refused the whole time. He would still say in the 90s, I remember him saying like, you should marry that Sandra Bullock. Just marry that Sandra Bullock. She's a real nice girl.
I need to know why he thought Sandra Bullock was the one.
Don't know.
Did you do a movie with her or something?
No, I've never met her. No, I've met her once years ago. He would rarely even have a conversation with me. Out of the blue, that came one day when I was back east. And then also one time he said to me, and see, he's the second, because when you're named after your granddaddy, you're not a junior, you're the second. So I am the third, he's the second. And one time he said to me, Sam, or Beanie, he always called me, almost always, Beanie was my family name for him. My family nickname is Beanie, because I was little Sam Beanie, like a little string bean. I don't know. sign all the cards and things to Beanie, to Beanie. He said, Beanie, when are you going to have a little Joseph Samuel Pancake, the fourth or fifth or whatever you are? It's like literally we have the same name, and you don't like this. The stand up writes itself. I'm like, right. You're the second. You should know that. I'm right. The third. Right. My child would be the fourth, which I'm not. It's not going to happen. I don't think that I know of.
So wait, do you think that did he have like a kind of like narcissistic personality disorder or whatever mm-hmm. before this?
What's this?
The
dementia,
slow moving dementia.
He has and will forever remain a mystery to all of us, my mm-hmm. mother included. He is a very interesting man who in 2013 we thought he was going to die, and my sister who lives here, Laura, two of us live in Southern California. We all flew to the bedside this nursing home was in to say goodbye, and I got to have my last moments with him. Which was because he liked when I sang to him, and like when I would sit by his bed and sing hymns or read to him, and he touched my hand when I was singing to him, and he said, "Meanie, thank you for loving me," which was as good as he could do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He couldn't say I love you, but he could do that.
Yeah.
And then the motherfucker lived for another 5 years. Like we thought it was going to be it, like literally 13 to 18, and. So he rarely he was just, what was the question? I'm back in my feelings and memories. What was the question?
No, but you're talking about, was it narcissistic personality disorder?
He's always been very strange. And here's what I think, especially when I found out and put together with therapy and stuff later, like this man, his first wife, who was the governor's granddaughter, is this big grand wedding in West Virginia society. And when she died 3 months after they were married, I mean, I think he shut down a lot. And then that would have been in 59 or 60.
Yeah.
And then in 68, his father committed, to whom he was close and felt very close to, committed suicide out of the blue.
Yeah.
And I think it took me a long time to untangle all that. But he shut down. He just went away.
Of course.
And then he moved us all back into Mill Meadow, the house he grew up in that granddaddy killed himself in.
Ooh.
So we grew up in that house that my grandfather had shot himself in the study room, in the study.
Oh, my God.
Did you know that when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the thing, the good and the bad, a part of it. Oh, heck yeah. We were told it was suicide. I remember being 4 years old and being like, the word is so pretty. It sounds like the name Sue or Susan and suicide. And then like that, knowing at four that you, maybe our parents shouldn't have told us right away that you can take your own life. Like what it was. And then it was my grandmother. And I barely remember granddaddy. He was because also here, the other thing, granddaddy, John, what he did too was, and I found this out, I knew it at the time, but I found it later from my mother, his daughter-in-law. Talk about privilege and being the king of your own castle and your own county. He had a stroke in 62 or 3, and he was only 56, which isn't too far from what I am now. And he just decided to kind of retire from the farm and in Pancake Chevrolet. No doctor could find any proof of it hospitalized, all the stuff, but he just decided he'd had a stroke. And Mr. Pancake, if you say so, you've had a stroke. And Mama still, she's like, there was no medical evidence, but he decided he had a stroke, and everyone went along with it. Because he was he was a very kind, well-liked, loving man. And I think he just decided at some point, I'm just going to step way back. Because his wife, my granny Rosie Bell, Fretwell Pancake. Rosie Bell Fretwell Pancake. My granny Pancake, she would sometimes she would just go to the, this is something I remember when I first went to the detox ward 8 years ago, I was like, I'm just gonna take to my bed like granny would go. She would go check into the hospital to rest for a couple weeks. Why is grandma in the hospital? She's just resting for a couple weeks. Maybe there was something more to that story.
There's something more to it. There's gotta be more to it.
It's amazing how much euphemism we all used to live with.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was just like what the barrier was, if it's the year 2000. There was some year where we just stopped living in euphemism and we just started saying what was actually happening to people.
I do a one-man show about my family called The Head Is Not Reliable, which comes from the fact when I asked my mother, why do you think granddaddy shot himself in the heart instead of the head? And she said, the head's not reliable. So my show is called The Head Is Not Reliable.
Wow.
Like,
it's true because sometimes you can slip.
Exactly.
Exactly. And just no, yes.
Brain damage. Yep. So, which is but worse. I talk about a lot of the things. My mother, the phrase into the 90s, the phrase I would hear older relatives say, living without benefit of clergy, which meant living together in sin.
Oh, without wow.
They're living without benefit of clergy.
Oh my God.
And my mother, this was like before my sister, my sibling who's now transitioning, but was then female, identified as female, my sister Catherine at the time, now my brother Chet. I think I'm allowed to say all that. It's the new thing in our family, which we're all dealing with. And which is great, but you know, it's a big change. Mm-hmm. But Catherine was a lesbian, then I was gay. My mother, we didn't talk about it to my mother, but people knew. This is one of my other, because all the weddings were at Mill Meadow. And when my sister Laura was getting married at Mill Meadow, this would have been in, when Laura got married, it was in 98. Okay. So well into the 90s, Laura and my mother were arguing about like what aisle to you, there's these hedges, you can walk down a sidewalk. Should I come around this side of the house where like the wedding thing was? And my mother said to Laura, since Sam and Catherine have elected not to marry, this might be the last wedding we have at Mill Meadow. So elected not to marry and she had never said that to us. She just came out of her and her polite Presbyterian, you know, way of saying they are gay, you know.
But okay, so there's a lot you gave us here, honey. We've got secrets. The head is not reliable.
It's a
layers.
Lie.
You know, slow moving dementia, honey. Jesus is over us. Frozen, chosen. Now let's talk about perhaps just a touch of how that might have affected your ability to have romantic relationships.
That my father's situation, a huge impact. I talk about it with my therapist still. One of the having this great therapist is how I was going to say earlier, I did when my father actually did pass away in 2018, even though it was the same weekend I was doing 10 Golden Girl shows, which was interesting. Two years ago, January.
Which girl are you again? Who do you play?
I'm Sophia.
Okay.
I'm Sophia.
I see that.
Yeah. It's look at it. I mean, come on.
At the time, you were doing all the shows.
I was doing the shows. Daddy died. I made my peace with him. I was able to give a lovely eulogy because I remember when I was in rehab, I remember being so mad at my father. I look back now how there was shit going on, and it was before he was in the nursing home. But like when I think about the anger I used to have at my father and my brother, for many reasons, it's therapy works if you know, and recovering all that
works. Work it, honey.
Exactly. And I was, you know, doing that too because I'm a sobro. But the man stuff is, and also the romantic stuff, I started, and I talk about this all the time, it's pretty well known, I started doing pretty hard drugs, like party drugs, meth and stuff, in my early 30s. Mm-hmm. And that's also when I stopped kind of having, like, my last boyfriend before that was when I was 30.
Okay.
And then I had a boyfriend in 2009 and 10. But there was a huge swath there that, like, I realized now that drugs and alcohol were my boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And of course I was, you know,
hooking up
a little bit and stuff, varying degrees of whether I felt like the ugliest, most disgusting creature in the world, you know, and all the shame I had from being the God, Jesus and religion and you're gay, so you're bad. Because the thing that impacted me most was when I was a little gay boy, knowing it's way early and just hearing nothing but faggot and queer and how bad that is. And it's in the Bible and just like knowing that I'm a terrible person, mm-hmm. but somehow knowing that I would be fine and that I really wasn't. Because I knew I didn't have control over it. Even as a kid, I was like, this is out of my hands. Like things happen and I have reactions and feelings. It's like liking fried shrimp and chocolate milkshakes. I didn't, you know, it was, so at least I had that kind of, cognition about it or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was very suicidal a lot as a kid. There were some like half-hearted suicide attempts that didn't take, and sad shit that happened. I know I was depressed a lot, and I know I had nothing but anxiety. My anxiety, I still have to say to myself now, no one is chasing you with a knife.
Mm-hmm.
Like, legitimately, like, why are you in such a tense hurry all the time?
Yeah.
But my father thing is, and I still am in this loop, and sometimes my therapist says, maybe this is just a life lesson that you have that you'll never really conquer. It's just something you've learned to live with, which is wanting the guy and pursuing the guy and longing for the guy or chasing the guy. And then the guy come, I don't get it. So I live in like yearning and longing and I'm awful and I'll never have him. Or I get him and then I don't want him anymore. And there's this very, I just remember like always wanting my dad to like chase me and hug me so I could pull away from him and show him that I hated him. Like that's, this is so very personal and intimate. It's like, I've only talked about it to my therapist, but my therapist always goes back to that image.
Yeah.
You wanted this guy to chase you so he could hold you and hug you and you could pull away from him and say, I hate you and I don't love you. Yeah. So that has impacted a lot of my relationships.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
It's insane how much of our parents imprint on us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, especially with relationships, you know, one therapist said like you always are trying to have a relationship with the parent you're trying to be close to.
Completely.
So for instance, if it was
completely.
Like, so it's like you end up picking a person who is like kind of cold or not effusive, because if you all can kind of conquer them, that is like getting that thing you wanted when you were five.
And I've been, over and over again. And I don't do it anymore. I've learned, and my father can be very cruel. Like he'd be verbally abusive and emotionally abusive. And again, like chicken or the egg, like, you know, in terms of the narcissism, the dementia or whatever. But I now know I don't want to be with guys who are cruel or say mean things or I've only been hit, like kind of hit a couple times, but that wasn't even a boyfriend, but it was a different situation. But how long have you guys been together?
Coming up on 11 years.
Yeah.
Dang.
I know. But it's funny because Andy was not, I think if anything, Andy was not like that. It was like, because that was at the time where I was like.
Like what? Your dad?
Yes. Like your personality. But the thing is, it was a conscious decision to be with someone different than who I had been with in the past. Because I met Andy when I was first trying to get sober. And so it was a big part of this point in my life where I thought, the things you've done for yourself haven't been working. So why don't you try this kind petite man?
Yes.
And it was like, that was literally the thinking of like, make a change. And I think if I hadn't been in that headspace, I would have even thought about it.
That's smart.
It was, but I know it's like, it is like hard. But at the same time, I will say this, like, I don't like people who are not open about their feelings. You know, I'm kind of like an open wound and I'm very like, this is what I feel right now.
Yes.
I do not like people who are not like that. Like to be in a relationship with them, but I realized I would, and even in the beginning, like, you know, it took you a while to become an effusive person. Andy was like kind of a cool customer.
Oh, well, all the feelings, I mean, I wasn't even talking about this in therapy today, but like all the feelings were there. I just like, I grew up in a household where we just didn't really express them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I talked about like how even like any kind of like emotion where besides laughing where I like can't control it, I have real problems with it. Like I was talking a lot today about at my aunt's funeral, I was crying, but I was so embarrassed that I was crying because I couldn't control it that I like turned to the wall and I was just crying into the wall. And but I'll say this also. Where I was, I heard the funeral manager or the funeral, what do you call them?
Director?
Mortician?
Funeral director?
Yeah. Funeral director, I think,
not the guy that like stuck the embalming fluid in, but
the guy who runs the building.
He was this weird sweaty guy. And,
sure.
I heard him fart and the rest of the fan, no one else could hear. So I'll say this, gave me shocked me out of my
out of your shame,
and also gave me a like, did no one else hear those guys? What's wrong with them?
So it was audible. It was loud.
Can he control himself?
Where did you grow up, Andy?
Pennsylvania.
But where?
Close to you.
But where?
Reading, Pennsylvania.
It's
halfway between Harrisburg and Philly.
Yeah,
but but yes. So emotions like anything, like I just didn't. They were there, happening. It's not I was like repressing them.
You were repressing them. You were experiencing them, but you could not let them out.
Well, you couldn't express them.
Yes. Repressing is different. Repressing is you push that energy down and then that energy comes out in weird ways.
Okay.
Oh, and you act out and shit. Yes. Yeah.
And you're just like, why did I, the example I always use of repression is in the squid and the whale, when the youngest kid is so the parents go through a divorce and the youngest kid doesn't know how to deal with it and he starts like jerking off at school and then he wipes his semen
right
the locker.
You know, why would you tell me that?
Because that to me it's like he's repressing his feelings and it's just coming out of these like strange ways. Sick. And to me that's the like that's like Freud himself would descend from heaven and be like, yeah. Yes. Ah, yes. That is the supreme example of repression.
Well, my thing is like, you know, being raised the frozen chosen way and the like, don't express your emotions or be, there's a line from a book called Drunk with Love. It's a Ellen Gilchrist, a Southern novelist. It's like, I was born into a world so polite, nobody ever told the truth about anything, which was also, it's just the politeness and never rocking the boat, never having these, because my parents could both be very angry. They could express that. But I also realized I didn't know until recently, I didn't understand until I got this really good therapist that that thoughts aren't feelings. I knew that, but I was intellectually I knew it. I misunderstood it because we would work on like what's going on in here. I'm rubbing my belly, you know, your vagus nerve, you know, and the other thing that he's like, my therapist is like, what was your first mouth was your belly button. And, you know, there's all this information that gets taken in through your gut, which is your, you know, all that stuff and how much, you know, the gut instinct and instincts in general. But like, so when I'm upset about something, he's taught me to like, that's the feeling. Are you burning down there? Are you tense? Are you warm? Describe with it, sit with it and let it go. Because I was thinking about my feelings so much and never actually feeling them, you know, and that's transformed my life.
Wow.
Really has. I mean,
that's like what you used to talk about, right? Like feeling it in your body.
Right. That's the thing. Like my therapist has the like example, like metaphor that like you're driving in your car and the emotions are happening outside the window and you're like looking at them as you're driving. You're like, huh.
Yeah.
Look at that anger.
Yeah.
Look at that anger. You're rubbernecking your own emotional.
Witnessing without experiencing. Yeah.
Well, like I was always a hyper emotional person and my mom was very, and she, you know, I think she grew up youngest of seven. My grandmother was mean as hell. Mississippi, honey. Shibuda, Mississippi. Grandma was mean as hell. They moved to Detroit. Like my grandfather was going to be lynched and they moved north to just to keep him out, keep him healthy. And he was like, honey, get him up north.
Mississippi, goddamn. Yeah.
It was like that. But like my grandmother was a really tough, really mean lady. And she lived to 98. Even when I had her, like, I feel like I would always say, I'd be like, grandma softened around 87. Like, I feel like it was the last 10 years. She kind of was like, all right, I'm not going to actively instill fear in the children. But it was like, but she's like a tough lady. But my mom, you know, and I was somebody, I would cry at the drop of a hat. I was just very sensitive, very shy, all that kind of stuff. And my mom would be like, Naomi, what's so hard about your life? Like, she was like, what's wrong with you? Like, even as a teenager, because she was like, she's like, what's going on with you? Everything's paid for. All you got to do is your homework. What's the problem? So it was any bad emotion I was having, it was a weakness in me. And my mom being like, Naomi, life is hard. You better toughen up. So that was that. That's what that always was. And even when I was going to therapy, she was like, what you going to therapy for? What's so hard about your life? Hello? It's like... So it was very,
you answered your own question, mother, by asking me that.
So it was like, ooh. And so I think it's partially why now, too, I think even me comedically, I am aggressively honest because I spent so much time. It was so much of like, tamp it down, keep it together. Don't embarrass me. You go to school with white people. You better be like the best of the best. All that kind of stuff. It was like, you know, not just good academically, but like, be good emotionally. Or like when I had trouble, she would also then take that as a reflection. I remember once we saw my therapist together in high school and she sat in the session and like acted like she was listening and like whatever. And then when we left, she didn't talk to me the entire ride home. And then we got back in the house. She was like, you embarrass me. You know what I mean? And it was like, how it was. And it was like, okay. Well, we won't do that ever again. And then now I'm an adult and she's like, why don't you talk to me? Ma'am.
Wow.
So it's like, that's the thing that's like, So it's a crazy, because like when you try to bring anything up, she's like, so I was a terrible mother. It's like, no, that's not what I'm saying, mm-hmm. but I'm saying, you know, anyway. Heidi, I think we got to take a break because we all went into it. We're going to take a quick break. I live for it. And then we're going to answer some relationship questions. You ready for that, Andy?
I'm ready.
You ready for that, Sam?
Yes, ma'am. I'm ready.
We'll be right back.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey y'all, wanted to pop in real quick and let you know that if you like what you hear and you want to support the show, there are a couple different ways.
Most of our support comes from our wonderful Patreon community. For $5 a month, you get 2 bonus episodes of just us, mostly spilling the tea, and occasionally searching for crazy bread in Los Angeles, plus lots of other bonus content. We love our page pals, and we couldn't do this without you. And if you want to join, go to patreon.com/couplestherapypod.
We also have merch, which includes Gotta Miss a Bitch and Jubu t-shirts, yeah. which you can find in the link tree in our Twitter or Insta bios.
And for absolutely $0, you can rate and review the show on Apple.
5 stars, please. It'll only take 10 seconds, and it helps us tremendously. Okay, that's it. We love you deeply. Now back to the show. And we're back, honey, with Sam Pancake, Woo! My idol.
Woo! Oh, one of you're my
true,
idol.
One of my true gifts of you're Los
both,
Angeles.
You're both my idols. That's actually true. Well, obviously, I'm in love with Naomi. But Sam.
Well, obviously, I'm in love with Sam as well as Leo. Oh,
Sam, no. I think you're quite the bee's knees.
Oh, thanks. I think you're the cat's pajamas, mister. Yeah.
The elephant's eyebrows.
Mm. Oh. I've never heard that one.
That's a great one. I believe Naomi was yes anding.
Oh, I'm not familiar. I'm not familiar and I'm not interested.
So we get questions from Instagram and Twitter DMs, from Gmail, from Vmail. And of course, this first one comes to us from, I believe she said we could use her name, Ilya.
Well, I hope so. We just used it.
From Instagram.
Okay. I love it. Okay.
Hey, guys. I always like to start out, by the way, Sam, with a little bit of a softball. Or I try to start out with one.
Fair enough.
Hey, guys, here's my question for the pod. So my husband and I are both interested in careers in the creative field. He writes, and I like to think of myself as a writer-actor. I've been wanting to move to LA, and he finally agreed, but recently he's been pulling back on the idea. He now feels like our chances to find jobs in the creative field won't increase just by moving to LA. We currently live in Raleigh, North Carolina. Which only provides quality barbecue and hipster Southerners who grew up on plantations. So I'm
familiar.
So I'm ready to get the fuck out of here. I'm originally from Arizona and have been itching to move out west anyway, and figured if we were to do a big move, we might as well go all the way to LA. Basically, I'm hoping you guys will just agree with me and say that the move will be totally worth it. Also, for context, we are both currently unemployed due to the pandemic, and prior to that, worked in the hospitality industry. Mm-hmm. I as a server and him as a bartender. Uh-huh. Now, Sam.
Yes.
I thought this might be appropriate because you also, did you go straight from from West Virginia to Los Angeles?
I weirdly, okay, I went to WVU in West Virginia, and then after I moved to Myrtle Beach to work at, you know, and wait tables or whatever for the summer after college, and I ended up staying there a year and a half, and which is, you know, I lost my way for a minute. Uh-huh. I was always like, once I save $600, and I just kind of never did. This was 86, 87, so, you know, different times.
That's still not enough, even at 86, 87.
No, it wasn't. I ultimately drove from, well, I was in Myrtle Beach. I went down to Charleston for a couple nights to see my friends. And I drove from Charleston, South Carolina to LA in 4 days. Wow. Saw my sister and her then husband in Albuquerque for one of the nights, but then was in hotels. And that's a whole other story, like maps, no internet, no cell phone. Uh-huh. No, terrifying.
Yeah.
Terrifying. Yeah.
I remember the days.
Homophobia rampant. I was like so afraid I'd be, you know, break down to Mississippi somewhere.
Right, right.
You know, and get, anyway, but.
REM had just broken through the charts on the radio.
Oh, no. REM was like early, like, yeah, well, that was, I was deeply into REM, like deeply. I always meant to go to Athens, but never had enough money. Georgia, I mean. Anyway, do you want my advice? Is that that? Yeah, so I came here with like. In 87, knew one person, had $200 in my pocket. Somehow within 2 weeks, finally got a job at Johnny Rockets. And then, you know, the rest is a mystery. I mean, history.
History, so, truly.
And I do tell the children when they ask me, because that was the days of three networks, because I don't think Fox started till 89. Here's my words of encouragement with a preface of pessimism. everything's hard to do here. It's difficult. You know, it's a hard life. We know all the cliches. Every cliche can be true if you're going to stare down those cliches and think about those cliches. I think that everyone who has it in them as much as Ilya does to come here and try her hand at it, I think you got to do it to know. And if you do it, either it'll work out or it won't, but at least you'll know and you won't live in regret. And there are so many more jobs here, even during pandemic. Of course, we can't really use 2021 as a good baseline for anything.
Right.
I think things are going to come screaming back by the end of 2021, maybe early 22. There are still like so many auditions and so many jobs. Like I got another job last week. I do it. You know, it's been.
Well, that's because you book Pancake. That's because you book. Okay. Pancake, I mean, hashtag books.
Booked, blessed, never stressed. Not true. There are so many more. Just take it from Grandpa. There are so many more opportunities here. And even once the restaurants and bars open back up, there are going to be, those jobs are gone, but they'll come back. People are leaving LA. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of empty apartments. I don't think rent's ever going to go down, sadly. But there's this whole deurbanization thing going on, supposedly. This might be a good time to get in here. If you have money, just have money saved up. I cannot express that enough. Have lots of money saved up. And once you, I mean, there's like, we all are, I'm overwhelmed by how many TV shows are in production over the world.
I mean,
and
I'm
movies.
With you on that. I think so, but I would say, I think I tend to lean towards like, do you have the money? Like, I would not say come here now, because I guarantee you you're probably paying half of what you would pay if you moved here just for rent.
And so,
where
yes.
she is, right?
Well,
right, in Raleigh, where I'm like, you might want to stay in Raleigh a little bit. As you said, because those hospitality jobs aren't coming back for a hot minute, because
Les, you could have a mortgage on a house
for less
than what we pay in rent.
Right.
Oh, completely.
But I think but you know what? I will say this though. You know, a friend of mine, for instance, she's like submitting to the WB director's workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I would say. Every single network seems to have like has a director's workshop or writer's workshop. And if a little extra, like, I don't even know.
Or the Sundance Labs and all that. So there's tons of those things. Yeah.
That to me is the kind of stuff you can do from where you are.
Yeah. Find a legitimate one, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The real networks. Find a legitimate, not like TED's,
not
free feedback.
Where you like pay,
right.
pay for feedback from.
Right.
No.
Someone that wrote on Homeboys in Outer Space. No
Which
offense.
We love the show.
No offense
we love the show.
To anyone that wrote on Homeboys in Outer Space. A job's a job. I would literally write for anything.
But
putting it out there.
There it is.
Anyone who's staffing.
Honey,
we'll write
who's staffing, get in touch.
But
I learned early, no one's thinking about you unless you're making requests.
Hello.
Touch. get in touch with my, I'm at mm-hmm. Gersh.
Get out of here. Stop talking. And like, so I was like, you, I think you could submit for that kind of stuff. Cause the thing is, I do feel about our time in LA, and when we say you have to give it a try, I moved here with a writing job. Mm-hmm. Right. And I also moved at a time when people really want black ladies in their writers' rooms.
Yes. Finally,
that
thank God.
Acting part of this, which is my true dream and love, has taken about 2.5-3 years to actually book things. But that's also, remember, I've been doing stand-ups in 2008.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, it takes a long time. So even when you say I'm going to move to LA and give it a shot, the real shot is 2 or 3 years, right? You can't say I'm going to give it 6 months.
You also can't put a timeline.
I say five.
You say 5 years. Okay.
I just don't think you can put a time, because you have to meet people. This is the other thing. You have to come here with a... you can't come here as a sociopath unless you're a really good sociopath. If you're great at being a sociopath, then go ahead. But like, there's a lot of people in between that I've noticed who don't know how to make friends, but they want the jobs that come with having friends, mm-hmm. and so they're like this like half homunculus type.
Half homunculus.
Yes, like a Gollum-y.
Yeah.
They're like Gollum-y types. Look, trying to find their precious.
Yep.
And they're not good at finding it.
That's true.
Does that metaphor work?
I sort of almost followed it, but I'm the other half of that homunculus. But the thing, to your point too, Naomi, is like, and this was not so much possible for back in the late 80s and 90s, but now, because they're all the YouTubes, the workshops, the stand up. Like, I don't understand people, and I have a couple in my life where I'm like, you have to do 8 things.
Yeah.
You can't just if Ilya just thinks she's gonna come here to be like a dramatic actress who does, you know, hopefully movie parts or episodic, that's real difficult. You have to be able to write, to do stand up, do storytelling, do improv, do sketch. The people that I know in their 40s, this is a couple of people who I'm currently annoyed with in my life, who like, yeah, you go to acting class, great. You want to be an actor still in your 40s and you're still waiting tables, or was it for pandemic? Like, you got to diversify. Like, mm-hmm. I'm always like, thank God I had a manager as I neared the end of my 40s. He said to me, and this was like the end of the it was late 90s. I was like mid 30s. And he said, you're going to be 40 soon, and no one's going to give a shit about you. You have to do a one man show. And that's when I wrote my first one man show about the family. Mm-hmm. And I was fucking terrified. Now I never get stage fright. I'm not scared. I don't give a fuck anymore. I'm too old. I don't care. Then I was like, I would get diarrhea before going on stage for an improv show. I would, or I would do meth or coke. I was terrified.
Yeah.
I was so terrified I did it, and it immediately opened these doors for me. And then I realized, and I learned how to do like sketch and characters with the crowd, this Annoyance Theater Second City crowd I fell in with. And I learned from them, was too afraid to take improv, never did Groundlings, never did Second City, too afraid. But then I slowly learned being forced to, like, you have an audition for Mad TV next week, you got to do 5 through the door, and you made it fucking work. Yeah. And so that's how I like, and then I started getting a career more in comedy, but then I kind of did a little bit of stand up and storytelling. My point, other than to ramble about myself, is like, I wish I had just come in like, I will do anything. I will I'm going to try stand. I wish my fear got in my way, and also a lot of homophobia, and like, I was always out. That's the other thing. I was always like out and gay since like my first job in 1990. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't always trumpet it, but like people knew, and that definitely was like,
that was
how I did anything. But like, it's be prepared to take improv, take sketch, even if you don't think you're funny. Just I don't think it's the place. If you just want to do acting, do community theater, you know.
Yeah.
It's so hard to break into just that here.
Well, I mean, because I do think about, this is also a good question for me. I'm glad you asked Sam this, because this is like all I want to know about Sam. Uh-huh. Is because you have been working a long time. You've managed to hashtag stay at work. Even in,
I know,
was there,
it's such a long time. And I mean, I think there is like, that is a big fucking deal to work for 30 damn years.
Yeah. Was there a job where you like, you were finally like, oh, I think I can, I think this is going to be, it might, it, you know, there's always ups and downs for everyone's career. I mean, look, people are taking pictures of Ben Affleck, you know, with like 30 donuts, like trying
to dunk the donuts in the packages, bless
and
his heart.
Yeah. And he looks like a deer caught in the headlights. So like, there's obviously like, you know, everyone's dealing with stuff, but like, was there a job where you were finally like, okay, I think, you know, I can, I'm doing this for real.
Oh, I am an idiot. See, I'm such a dum-dum. I'm not super smart. Like this is, I'm probably the least intellectual anyone in my family, my siblings, and I have been blessed, cursed with this weird, a part of it was the crucible of growing up a terrified gay child. I just wanted to get the fuck out of there, and after I got the fuck out of there, I didn't care what happened. Mm-hmm. It's joy for me, please, sometimes too much joy with in my nose and down my mouth and in my veins and such, but you know, it all came from a place of like, tomorrow's going to be great. And like optimism and like, you know, life's too mysterious. Don't take it serious. Like I've always had this, and a lot of this, I probably is chemical and I don't have clinical depression. But I have always been able to be like, wee, you know, which is so silly. Cause a part of me, this is a whole other story, but like, I how do I put this? I had a sense too of like, oh my God, this, I don't think this is the only life. I've always had like, there's a before this, there's an after this, there's many lives. I just kind of believe that. Even youngly, I did youngly. And I was like, I'm in this life. My name is Sam fucking Pancake. I still was a child to be like, our name is fucking Pancake. Is this registering to everybody? Because no one else seemed to be freaked out or weirded out by it. I was like, literally, okay, we call them hotcakes, I know, but they're pancakes. And just like they had never left. So I get that question every day and people think I made it up to be funny. I didn't. So I was like, I'm going to LA. And the other thing was like, I want to go be feel safe away from my family with a boyfriend, have a boyfriend that won't get back to my parents, get back mm-hmm. to my cousins, get back to my high school friends. That's where I was back then still. And I just want to go out and fuck and be an actor and have fun and drink and party and wee-haw. And I did. So I think a part of it, and this is like, who am I to be so objective about myself? It's not objective. Again, I'm not that smart. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was just like, people found me charming. I know my good Southern manners helped a lot. I know that I was like, I was fun to be around mostly. You know, I still don't fucking know what happened. I also, here's something else I know that I did right by accident. I also never felt comfortable like attaching myself and being friends with people who I thought could help me. Mm-hmm. I let my natural organic friendships happen. And sometimes that led to jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's what I was and talking about with the like, don't be a sociopath.
That's the thing. Also, I met sociopaths early because no one in my family, there were not, I didn't know a lot of I wasn't aware of sociopathy growing up. So I was like, I learned early in the 90s, some people I'm like, oh, these are sociopaths and this is mm-hmm. the things they do. And I'm not like that. And I would be like, I don't care if it gets, I'm not going to go and pretend to be so-and-so's friend and hang out with him. I can't stand him just because maybe he could cast me in something. Mm-hmm. It would be like pretending to be straight. Like I can't, my body won't let me. And I'm far from perfect. And I've done lots of things wrong, believe me, including this, you know, my drug and drinking kind of run my show for 15 years. But like, also, what was I even saying? Because also, I lost my train of thought.
How you lasted for 30 years because you happened to be nice and people were like, we love that J Sam.
Yeah. Oh, and then now, like, I'm just naturally made you. It's that Patti Smith thing. It's like, just keep making a good name for yourself. Make a good name for yourself. Make a good name for yourself. And I really hung into that. And I also, so now my way of doing that is just auditioning so much that I people remember me like this guy. Okay. So DJ Nash, who show runs A Million Little Things that I've been recurring on mm-hmm. for the past few seasons. I met him going and he tells the story all the time. In like 2002 or three, he was doing his first sitcom pilot as a writer showrunner. I came in for the part of like the beery, like on the lazy boy, like frat guy friend, straight, like what girls, who, huh? What a no bong hit. Like, you know, that kind of dude. His name was probably Zach or something. But, like they had me come in and I remember just being like, I was like, and I would had made the mistake enough times already of being like trying to go in and be like, you know, those auditions like, Meredith, what's wrong? I'm your boyfriend. let me hold you. And like, I'm not going to get that shit. Right. You know, fucking George Newbern's going to get that shit. Tom Everett Scott's going to get that shit. I'm not. One casting director, one time she at a workshop, she said like, you're Tom Hanks, but you're gay Tom Hanks. You can't hide behind your finger. And this is all in my show too. So anyway, I finally like went in for this job. Like where I knew by then on a sitcom pilot audition, be yourself as much as possible, yeah, or that character you're amazing at consistently because they're going to write for you. Mm-hmm. And so I went in being like, just being me, but in that those lines, and it killed them. And he was like, you're not going to get in the room. He was like, you're not right for this, but I'm going to put you in everything I can once I get there. And he has.
Wow. And he has. So good.
And it continues. Right. And I've had that like search party with like even search party, which Naomi writes on it. And our friend Charles is one, and Sarah Violet are one of the showrunners of. I told this is something else I started a few years ago. I was like telling my friends or acquaintances who I like, I love your show. I'd like to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. Swallowing my stupid pride or embarrassment or like my whatever is like,
oh, yeah.
I don't know people like anything I do until they tell me. I don't assume people are like, everyone thinks I'm great. Like, I don't, would never, sometimes I'm even like, me, really? But like, and that same thing happened with, I don't know, more. I get more stuff now from offers, which sounds snotty, but like,
you've earned it, honey. You have earned offers.
First of all, I've earned it.
You've earned your offers.
And it's like, you know, it's been a good last few years, but I just got a job from an audition in December. I just found out I booked it. I was thinking about it. I was like, oh, I've been working consistently for a while, but the last job I got with an audition only was the show Abby's in late 2018. And wow. I auditioned a lot in 19 and 20. So it's like, I get less than now I can't even think. I do work a lot, but I get less jobs than I actually book, you know, like we all do.
Yeah, no, I understand. I feel like I'm also discovering that too. Like a few things I've done lately, the voiceover especially, those have been offers. And whenever I audition, I do not book it. Like whatever voiceover people audition, they don't want it.
Because they always like every cartoon audition that I'm helping you with is always for like a 5-year-old child. that's not your voice.
Right. I know. I'm always like, can you just have, I'm like, I literally have the voice of a 70-year-old woman. Can you just let me do
You
that?
Have a majestic, stately voice. Your voice has authority. Your voice has authority, Naomi. It
wait
does.
Till someone picks up my cartoon grandmas.
Yes, I want to be in the cartoon grandmas.
Do it.
But wait, okay. So wait, before we go to the next thing, though, was there a job where you were just like,
oh, yeah,
finally,
that was the question? Yeah. That's where we started. I couldn't remember. I thought every job was that job. Yeah. The first job I got my fucking, like, you know, Taft Hartley, which was a commercial for a Japanese English school with Casper Von Dien, him and me playing touch football later
Casper
of Starship
Van
Troopers.
Dien. Oh, my God, yes.
The thing about
From
me,
Starship
too, you have to
Troopers?
Remember, Yeah. It was definitely my first paid union job. It was either his first or one of his first. He's a delight. And so cute mm-hmm. back then. I lost my thought. I lost my train of thought again. But I thought every job was going to be it. Like mm-hmm. my first network commercial. This is it. Nothing's going to stop. Oh, here's what I was going to say. You have to remember, like, so many people I knew before, during, and after they were famous too. Like, it's so nice to hear you guys say, "Oh my God, you've been consistently working for 30 years." Because that's what I really wanted. I just wanted to work consistently mm-hmm. until I decided not to anymore. Make money, have a good life. But I've seen so many people, like that first national network commercial I did for MasterCard, where I was playing the young boy who's on a skateboard. He's trying to help his girlfriend move into a new apartment. And then his skateboard goes all the way down the stairwell. And I wish I could find a copy of this. If anyone can find this, I will give you a kiss and $100. And I look in the camera like this and I go, oh, my skateboard. And like people would literally see me on the street and go, oh, my skateboard. That was after the English speaking school. And I went to the fitting, and at the same fitting with me was this cute Jewish boy who I thought was sexy at the time. And I looked down at the sign-in thing, and his name was Adam Sandler.
Oh,
and it was, there were two in this MasterCard campaign, there were two like young scrappy dudes who like piss off, like I pissed off my girlfriend's father. I don't know what he did in his, but I was like, oh wow, Adam Sandler. And I think I'd heard of his pre-SNL.
Yeah.
I think I'd heard of him from stand up, mm-hmm. but then I was like, he was one of those people I watched like get, you know, he's pretty huge now. Like so many times when I was in the pits of my drink, I'm like, Sandler is everything. I am nothing. Like I watched Schwimmer go from my best friend's roommate to Schwimmer, you know,
wow.
Courtney Love from, and this is not out of school, but she was my friend Joe's junkie stripper friend who then like went on to, you know, it's yeah. just like seeing all these Molly, Anna Gasteyer, Melanie Hutzel, Molly Shannon, Ben Zook and Antoinette Spolar, who are great, hilarious performers also. And we were all doing this Jackie Beat show in 95. Anna and Molly pre-SNL, Melanie after, when Molly found out she got SNL. So yeah. It's frustrating for me to always be in the mix, and a lot of it then. But the thing is, like, I've seen all these things happen, and I've had people say to me, "Why do you think you didn't make it?" I'm like, I don't even know what to say. And I know there was years in my life with the drugs and drinking where I didn't do and it was a different time too. Like, you know, now I'd be like, "Well, just start on YouTube or get a TikTok channel," or just there wasn't that shit, and I just had a lot of depression around like. Feeling like I wasn't getting anywhere and then mm-hmm. drinking more. And then that made me miss an audition, and that shit did not help. But a lot of that was most of my drinking and drug use. A lot of it was like sadness and depression. And just not clinical, but like being sorrowful about not fucking working or booking things or being told all the fucking time how gay I was and how every different version of faggoty, like every like you're too this, you're too this, you're too this, like non fucking stop. And I was so weird to me because I'm like, I am this guy. I am not like the ladies, I think we have. Do you want some necklaces? I don't know why it's necklaces. But like, I'm not that guy.
That was like a Paul Lynde Muppet.
Exactly. I'm not a Paul Lynde Muppet.
And just, it's so funny that people kept telling you seem too gay when it sounds like you were always a boyfriend whose skateboard fell.
Well, that was that was the whole thing. And I played a lot of young dads and stuff. But another famous story of mine to me, Julie Halston, who's an amazing Broadway actress and everything. I did this pilot with her at MTV with Sherry Vine, Jackie Beat. It was basically Facts of Life, but in drag at a Catholic school and really dark. In 99, and Julie Halston was in it, and she said to me, and I played the priest at the Catholic school who was clearly gay, and that again was a friend, one of my good friends made that all happen, and that's why I was in it, because of friends, genuine friends, and I including Jackie Beat, who I still work with. And Julie Halston said to me, she was like, "You're like Nathan, you remind me of Nathan, you know, you'll work till you drop it, you'll never play straight." And I said, Julie, I play straight, because in the 90s, I did dozens and dozens of national commercial. Mm-hmm. I made a lot of money. That shit's all dried up now because of non-union shit. But I said, I play straight all the time in commercials. And she would say, "Only for 30 seconds, honey." I'll show you my commercial where I live scrappy delivery boys and like young dads at the nursery at the hospital. Like, there's my baby. Like, you know, I was the Florida orange juice dad for 2 years.
Okay, you have to send me all of these. I want all of them. I have
to. The funny
to see
thing
you
is this, you saw
juice
them
dad.
All as a child, I guarantee
I
you.
I bet. Well, I mean, I'm telling you, you were a true celeb to me because I watched you on Will and Grace as a little girl. As a little girl.
A little girl.
Tiny child.
Not that much younger.
No, I was not. Okay.
Okay.
Sam, we have another question. Do you have it? Are you ready? Are you prepared? Okay, yes. So this one is a voicemail, which is my favorite way, you guys. I love when you call in because it lets me know where you're at emotionally. So if you would like to ask us a question, hit us up at 323-524-7839.
Hi, Andy and Naomi, and maybe guest. I know you guys like to hear people's voices.
Yes.
But I'm currently walking down the Danube Canal in Vienna, and that would be expensive to call and leave a voicemail. First of all, I think you guys are just the greatest guests, and I'm so grateful for you. Second of all, I had a proctocolectomy 4 years ago, which means that I don't have a butthole. And, every time you guys have someone say, "Loosen your butt," it makes me laugh even more as a buttholeless person. And the third thing is, I got my butthole removed, got really healthy, and finally, like, found something I wanted to do, which was to become a dietitian and help other people with Crohn's disease or other issues with their food. And I started studying, but my husband got a job in Vienna, and he's got all this passion and, you know, goals, and he's had it for a long time, so his wins. So I moved to Vienna, and I couldn't just transfer schools, and all my school records are too old or too American to prove that I'm actually able to study. And I'm kind of stuck. I got a nutritionist certificate, and I'm kind of happy just being a freelance nutritionist and a housewife. And apparently that's embarrassing, I think. Or my husband is just feeling guilty that his dream moved us away from my dream. I guess my question is, like, what do couples do in this situation? Like, no one wins. And I guess we just have to get okay with the situation. But I can't take care of his feelings. And I'm also kind of also bummed and resentful that we're here because of him. Thanks in advance for any insights or jokes. Take care from Vienna. Auf Wiedersehen.
Wow, that was a real journey.
So that, by the way, that was a that was an audio file that was sent to our Gmail.
Oh, okay. So that's what she was like. It's too expensive to call. So yes. she did a voice memo.
So she did a voice memo and then emailed it to us.
See, there are ways you can do this, people.
Yes, folks. Okay. If you don't want to call on the line, voice memo and email, maybe.
That's huge. I've never met a person without a butthole.
Well, explain something to me that a story I heard years ago, and now it clears it up. But about this friend of ours who slept with this guy who was really hot, and he was trying to eat his. How dirty can I get on here?
Yeah,
as dirty as
it.
Possible.
He was gonna rim this guy, and he searched and searched his crack for a butthole and couldn't find one. And I didn't know that that was a thing. So I'm not gonna say who it was.
Yeah.
But he always tells the story of like the guy with no butthole. I'm like, it had to be there somewhere. No, I really looked and looked, and it was dark. But that's it. That means you get like you have a colostomy bag.
Yeah, you have a bag.
But do you still have the nerve endings there?
Like,
if you want, if you want to rim someone. And they didn't have a butthole, would there still be...
I don't think so.
If they close it up, I don't think so, Andy.
I don't think so either.
I don't think so, Andrew.
I'm curious.
Andrew,
I'm
I don't think so.
I'm curious. I'm asking.
Well,
mother.
She could send another Gmail voice memo. What was the question?
It was basically she had these dreams of being a dietitian, but his job took them to Vienna, and so...
She can't
really practice what she's been working towards.
So she's not able to. Okay.
None of her credits transfer to whatever the European university system is. So she got.
I thought she said she was working there.
She got a nutritionist certificate,
which is not the same.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The dietitian. Yeah, dietitian is like one more level up.
And there was an unsaid part, but that basically that like her husband is. It either feels guilty.
Yes.
Like she said that he's like, I guess has said some stuff that it's embarrassing.
What was that about?
I think that's the meat of the question.
The meat of the question. Yeah. It's not like he feels guilty that she had to put her dream on hold for his, and that she is now what she said, what, a stay at home mom and a part-time nutritionist.
Yes.
Or freelance nutritionist. Like that. So it's like,
or housewife.
Yeah. So it's like, okay. Yeah.
Which
maybe.
Is, by the way, not bad at all. Just so we're clear. Just
I was going to say, it sounds like a great life.
I know. I'm like, honey, you're walking along the Danube. You know, it's like, it sounds like you're
goodness.
Thriving.
I'll say this. I'm vacuuming every morning, listening to a podcast. It's not terrible.
I mean, I think the thing is, that's part of what, trust me, I understand though. I think you and I both, Andy, have dealt with like the guilt, you know, when one person's working or the other person's not. Because honestly, you and I have been together 11 years and we've rarely had a job at the same time.
No. Mm. I remember, I did feel guilt when my first job was in 2013. I moved out here for a writing thing and you were still back in New York.
Ooh, child, I broke down. Sam, I said, he's gonna get a taste of fame. He's gonna realize I'm crazy. This is the end of us. He's ascending. Like, oh God, we had a dinner with one friend before he left, and I literally went to the bathroom at the restaurant and cried
honey.
For so long that then Andy comes and knocks on the door and is like, are you okay? And I'm like,
Wow,
so
honey.
Dark.
Yeah. But
dark,
you're good
dark.
Now. That was 7 years ago.
Yeah. So but I know I remember feeling like guilty a little bit that you were, and I remember also like before Broad City too, like I had come back from this job and like you were kind of struggling and mm-hmm. I'm sure there's been times when I've been struggling and
yeah,
you felt bad. It really does. It that guilt bums me out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
When I think this is more something for the husband to deal with, which
right.
is like,
yeah.
fucking get over it. Because yeah. it's like she did sacrifice something. Like, I guess one, acknowledge the sacrifice. She is sacrificing
yeah.
something
yeah, yeah, yeah.
for you.
Yeah.
But also it's for the both of you too.
Right.
Right. And if you don't acknowledge it, you repress it. Because I think you and I, we don't feel guilty for getting things now.
Yes. Yes.
Good.
Yes, yes.
You shouldn't.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Right. I mean, it takes time. It takes time, though.
It's a journey.
I mean, it really is hard to like. Well, it's also like there are times when you feel like, why can't we both ascend at the same time?
Yeah.
And that's rarely how life works.
It's
just
not.
True. It's just very rarely how it works, and it's like, it's fucking annoying. But I think also too, the thing is, you both are open about it, and then you also cannot resent. Like, you say you resent him. I don't know how if that manifests. Meaning, do you make snide comments? Do you make him feel like shit? Do you complain about being there?
Mm.
Well, then that's exacerbating it, if that's what's happening.
Yeah.
But you have to say, like, the moment you agree to go, you're on board. Not that you like everything.
I wonder how long they have to be there. If it's something like, if it's a diplomat thing where he'll be or whatever, something where maybe they come back into America in 2 or 3 years,
yeah.
or if it's a lifetime thing, because that's a whole different story.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Ooh, yes. I didn't think about that. In my brain, this was just like something that was just a couple years. Like, it was either like a postdoc or,
yeah.
or like, yes, like, yeah, you know, diplomatic yeah. corps stuff is only a couple years, right?
Yeah.
It's like 2 years and then you move somewhere else.
I
think so. So maybe, but it's like, It's hard. I think the thing that's so important is, and it sounds like you're doing it, is making sure you're finding ways to enjoy yourself now.
Like walking down the Danube?
Because I think sometimes what can happen is that feeling
of... I would murder everyone in this town for a stroll down the Danube.
Vienna, my God. No.
I think there's always that feeling, you know, when you feel like you're, quote, putting your life on hold. That is a very anxiety-inducing feeling. I think we've all felt it for the last fucking year.
Yes.
Right. And I'm like, this has been like, well, we're kind of on pause. So it's and so I think that's and so the question is, what can you be doing now so that you don't like what are the other things? Like, I know you can't really take the classes, but can you kind of take a little something or like meet some people? I mean, again, I don't know
online?
Where you guys are at. Exactly. So I mean, like, online.
Now that everything's online, can you find the
right
courses in America to take?
Oh, I see what you're saying. But
I know it'll be like at you know, 8 hours earlier than where you know, but
yeah, that's like, yeah, it's very, it's tricky. Relationships are very tricky. They're
did you
very
ever,
tricky.
Did you ever have to sacrifice something for someone?
Something for someone.
Me?
Sam. I didn't want to be too, because I didn't want to be like, it could
oh,
be like
no,
a,
I mean,
a family member, or like a loved one.
Yeah.
I'm very selfish that way. Like, I, even with or without my parents' blessing, I was going to go become an actor. I mm-hmm. you know, I don't really subscribe to that much about astrology, but like, I'm a Taurus and I guess we're very stubborn. And I was like, no, this is what I'm going to do. And it goes back to my thing earlier. It was like, I'm going to go there. It's going to work out or it doesn't. And then I was like, I'm going to be an actor. I worked in casting as my day job for a lot of the 90s, but then was able to just be an actor. I didn't have a plan B. I guess I could have stayed in casting if I really wanted to, but no. And I've been in relationships. Like, I haven't been in a long-term one since I got sober, but I was always kind of like, yeah, I would never give up my career for you. Or like, I know very well that I would never move to, for me personally.
Right.
Doing what I do and having to live here mostly, because even though things are shot all over and I do go to Vancouver a lot, most sitcoms are here in town.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I do a lot of that shit or whatever, or New York, and they'll fly you there. But I was like, I will never move to, you know, Plainfield, Illinois with you. I'll never go live in Tallahassee because you are on the baseball team there. Now that just got sexy for a second. Why is my future husband on the baseball
team? He's on
team.
A minor
like
league team in Tallahassee.
Why does it have to be minor league? Shoot for the majors. You're dating
like
one of the
Orioles.
Tallahassee
Tomahawks. I'm just a baseball wife now. So I actually haven't, because you know why? And I think about this kind of shit because my brother-in-law used to say about me, Sam stands for self-absorbed man, S-A-M. I'd be like, but you know, he's awful. Just kidding. I love you. But I was always like, And I say this to my family because I'm the only, my older sister doesn't have kids either. I'm the only one not in a long-term relationship or without kids. And I was like, I know what I can take care of, and it's just me. Uh-huh. And I don't cause trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't lotty dotty. I like to potty. I don't cause trouble. I don't hurt nobody. And it was my theme song. And I'm like, I don't have kids because I know I wouldn't be a great dad. I don't want to make the mistakes my dad did. I've gotten out of relationships where I'm like, I'm not into this anymore. I know I can't be the guy you need. I'm going to, against your will, maybe I'm leaving you. Because I knew that, because I'm also pretty good on my own. So no, to answer your question in a long, rambling, narcissistic way, I really haven't, but I've on purpose haven't. Like, right. I've made sure I wasn't in situations where I deeply resented being a little gay kid, having to pretend to be someone he wasn't, and never once giving voice to my actual emotions for the first 20 years of my life.
Right. You know? Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. That now you're like, this is me, and this is my boundary.
Yes. So that's tricky for me. Yeah, it's like, and I do wonder, like, because I love Vancouver so much, and I met some people there that I'm like, what if this is my husband and I live in Vancouver now? Mm-hmm. I almost think I could do that, especially at the end, before the election, I was like, maybe I really want to do that. You know? I still would love to live in both.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was in grad school, it freaked me out that the chances that I would get a professorship in a major city was low.
Right.
And I was like, fuck. No offense to anyone who lives in like Iowa or whatever, but I just didn't want to live in like.
Right. You were always trying to get away from small towns.
There's nothing wrong with Des Moines. Exactly. I just didn't want to live there. And I knew that that's what, if I was going to stick with this, if I was going to get my PhD, I was going to end up in a small town somewhere. And I was just like, it like freaked me out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I ran.
Yes, you did. You ran to New York City, baby.
Good for you.
So we hope that helps you, our Vienna baby. Our Vienna baby with no butthole.
Our Vienna baby.
My Vienna baby with no butthole. I love you.
And I love that she's right up front with that. She's like,
you gotta tell it. You gotta tell it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is so funny, though, because we really do. We are about loosening your butts. Mm-hmm. She's like, ha ha.
Well, loosen. You know what? Loosen your bowels.
Loosen your bowels. Well, no, that's different, but... That's different. That's not the same as unclenching your ass.
There's a whole lot I could say about that as a gay man, but I'm not going to. I do have references, though, if you want to hear from those guys.
Sam.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Oh, is it over? No.
I mean, we could have kept you for 900 years, but I want you to have a healthy dinner.
I am. I was in the middle of it. I'm going to go back to it. I'm going to
What is it?
Oh, it's just a quickie, simple, like, one of those gluten-free bowl type frozen situations.
Okay, gluten-free bowl. Well.
I'm gonna go drink another glass of water.
And I'm gonna And I'm gonna maybe eat some soup.
Sam, this was a gosh darn delight.
Oh, you are.
And we hope you guys enjoyed it, and we will see you next week. Bye.
All right.
Bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.